Welcome back to the Iowa blog. Please pour yourself a cup of coffee. This is a cappuccino that my wife made for me. And together we're going to take another journey back into the garden along with Yahweh and Adam, and soon be introduced also to Chawa. This is part six, I believe, of the episodes that we are sharing about what occurred 6,000 years ago in Gan Eden. And we're doing so for all of the reasons I have mentioned previously, one of which we learn precisely what our Creator created for His and our entertainment, for His and our pleasure. It's lovely to know what God wants. Matter of fact, when you know what God wants, based upon what He has shared with us, you don't even have to ask Him for His will for your life. He's already told us. And the other advantage, of course, of studying the conditions that existed in the garden is that we're able to have a peek into our future. The whole plan that God has presented is one where we begin life with Him in Gan Eden, the Garden of Great Joy, and with the Moed Mikre, with Pesach opening the doorway to life and matzah expunging our souls of the fungus of religion and politics so that we appear perfect in God's eyes, and with firstborn children, Bukurim, causing us to be adopted into God's family, to be empowered and enriched, and Shavuot being the next harvest, one that is upcoming in our very near future, just 16 months from now, May 22nd of 2026. And then with the Teruah harvest, that's the one that occurs in September, 7 years later in 2033, 10 days thereafter, Father and Son, Messiah and God return to our planet, October 2nd in 2033, so that we can all end up in Sukkah, camping out with Yahweh. And so we begin camping out with Him in the garden. We conclude by camping out with Him on the earth, which is transformed into the conditions experienced in the Garden of Eden. So as we study the Garden of Eden, we will note that, well, there was no religion there. There was no politics there. There was no militarism. There was no patriotism there. There were no conspiracies there. All of the things that permeate our world, turning it into chaos, didn't exist then. And so that is what God's going to expunge from the earth, just as He removed our sin on matzah so that we can enjoy a 1,000-year celebration of Sukkah in year 6,000 to 7,000. Yeah. So we're studying this because this is where we're going. And if you like what God describes of Eden, then you would like eternity. If you don't like it, then you don't want to be part of it. And so you get this picture of what God is offering so that you can determine whether or not you want to be part of it. Now, I'm hoping that you poured yourself a coffee. And we're going to begin in episode six of In the Garden. We're picking it up where we left off. And what we read is that Yahweh says, "Now, Yahweh Almighty, who fashioned and formed out of the elements of the earth every living animal of the expansive environment, in addition to every bird of the sky, He brought them to Adam in order to see what He would call them and how He would greet and welcome them. Therefore, everything for the benefit of the relationship that Adam approached and designated, called out to and encountered, that became the name and the reputation of that living soul." So much we can garner for this. So let's just go back and look at this word for word. So it begins with wa. Wa means in Hebrew, the wa is used to say, I'm going to begin a new sentence, and that new sentence is related to things that have come before it. I'm adding to the knowledge that you are gaining by reading and studying this narrative. Yeah, well, his name is presented right here in the text. It does not say, now the Lord. It says, now Yahweh. And we know how to pronounce Yahweh's name because he told us it was based upon the verb haya, which has three of the four letters in it, the H, the Y, and the H. And so all we have to add to our understanding is that wah again, and the wah is pronounced as an O sound, as it is in Torah, as it is in Shalom. And since the Torah is where we're reading these narratives from Yahweh, he explained in the very guidance of the book in which they are presented how to pronounce his name. So now Yahweh, Almighty Elohim, Elohim is from Eloah. That also tells us how to pronounce Yahweh's name. Elohim is an interesting word because the E is from the first letter in the Hebrew alphabet, which is an Aleph. The Lamed is also a consonant in the Hebrew alphabet. And what's interesting about these two together is in the original script of ancient Hebrew, the Aleph, the first letter in Yahweh's name, was drawn in the form of a ram's head. Now, what this tells you is that Yahweh is willing to defend his sheep, because that's what a ram does in the flock. He's willing to lead the sheep. He is willing to be one with his sheep. And he is telling us that not only is he defensive of, protective of, playing a leadership role in his flock as this ram's head. The second letter of El, for God, is a Lamed. You know how a Lamed was drawn in the ancient Hebrew alphabet? Very much related to the sheep again, to the lambs. It was a shepherd's staff. And the shepherd's staff is not only used as a walking stick because Yahweh wants to walk with us as part of his flock. It's also designed to protect the flock because if an animal that intended harm for the sheep entered the flock, the shepherd's staff was used as a means of diverting them, shooing them away. And when a lamb fell into a ravine or got stuck somehow, or even in water that was too deep for them to swim, the crook on that shepherd's staff was perfect for pulling them back out, for grasping hold of that wayward child, if you will, the kid, and bringing them back into the fold. So those are the primary letters in El, Yahweh's name. And of course, in the original, the generic form from which El and Elohim, Elohim simply means the plural of El. It's a kind of a royal we thing. It's something common in ancient languages where when you're speaking of the most royal of royalty, you would use we. I use we all the time when I'm speaking of what I have come to learn by studying Yahweh's testimony, because we were involved together. Yahweh, his words, set apart spirit, of which there are seven that reside within me to help me understand this and communicate it effectively to you. And then there are others who are part of the family that do essential work to help make certain that this message is clear and correct. And so that is the nature of the wah that exists in Eloah. It says, now who fashioned and formed, Yatsar, who conceived and created, devised, planned, prepared, thought about, and then forged out of the elements of the earth, Min Ha Adama. Adama is a word, quite frankly, that has taken on a very different meaning to me, become far more personal than previous. And if I may explain the reason for that, is that, well, Adama does mean earth, and so it's the elements of the earth. Min ha Adama would be from the elements of the earth. scientifically accurate. Our physical bodies are comprised of the elements. In fact, we are literally stardust because most of our bodies are comprised of heavier elements, except for the water part, which is two gases that unite in hydrogen and oxygen to form water. But the rest of it is heavier elements, and those heavier elements require a supernova, if you will, as an explosion of a dying star. And so we are material beings with a nefesh soul that is not material. It can't be weighed. It can't be measured. But it is the essence of our lives. Now, the reason that Adama means more to me now than it did previously, it's because it's not just the earth. Adam is the name of the man that Yah was talking about. So Adama would be the feminine of man. And the reason that Yahweh would use a feminine noun to describe man, because at this point there was no woman in the garden, is because the thing that made Adam who he was, the reservoir of his personality, his attributes, his attitudes, his memories, all of the things that made Adam who he was, were resided within a nefesh, a consciousness or soul. And our nefesh consciousness is feminine. So it would be appropriate to speak of the thing that makes us special as Adama. And so it is the feminine aspect of our masculine nature, which is our very soul, nefesh, that Yah was alluding to here. In addition to being a reference to a man with a nefesh soul, Adama speaks of red. And so it's a kind of a bloody red that the color describes. And since the final sacrifice that cleanses and prepares the mortal remnant of Yisrael that is left over and remains after the end of the time of Israel's troubles in 2033, September of 2033, the end of the month, the 24th of September to be exact, a day that will be marked by a solar eclipse. So Yahweh has already set the celestial fanfare in place to mark this day. It is in year 6000 Yah. The Anima Parah is scheduled to be sacrificed on that day. It's a role that I represent. I will be offering my life to spare this mortal remnant of Yisrael so they're prepared to meet Yahweh and their Messiah, Dod, 10 days thereafter. And Yahweh has an elaborate ceremony that is prepared. Eliyahu is going to be the master of ceremonies for this event, reprising what he did 2,888 years earlier when he opposed the religious and political establishment of Israel at the time. And Yahweh is going to release copious amounts of water from beneath the Temple Mount. He's going to ignite a massive fire that will be beneath my bloodied carcass at that time. The ash and the water and the fire collectively will cleanse and purge this remnant of Yisrael according to Yahweh's plan. And so the Adama Parah means a bloody red van of the earth, Adama, and it's specifically talking about his soul. We'll get to that in a moment. And it says Parah, which is who has been productive and fruitful. That is the job that I've been assigned. It's why I'm doing these programs with you. It's why we're picking up a cup of coffee and sharing these times together. I am the third and final Zeroah. Zeroah is one who cultivates the seeds for a productive and fruitful harvest. That is exactly what Parah means. And so this is Yahweh's way of saying, we are going to come full circle. I have fashioned and formed, I have conceived and devised and planned and prepared by Adama Pera, so that we do come full circle and so that you are invited back into the garden. Pretty neat when you consider all of his words. And the more you realize that the part of the this Adama Pera that matters isn't his Bashar body, which is going to be pummeled by the Torahless one on the Temple Mount the morning of Teruah, September 24th of 2033 in year 6000 Yah. And it is the body that is being not only bludgeoned by the opposition to Yahweh's people as the sacrifice, just as Dodes Bashar body was bludgeoned by Rome, the adversary, to render his people such that they had the doorway to life opened for him on Pesach, Passover, in year 4000, on 33 CE. It is a concept that we share, because in both cases, it was only our Bashar that is harmed in this way, is sacrificed for the betterment of God's people. And our Bashar is the part of us that we really don't care about, because God can, and we even in eternity, can manufacture, we can yatsar our own Bashar once we become a energetic embodiment of our nefesh. So Dod sacrificed his Bashar, I will sacrifice my Bashar. Now, the other thing that is wonderful about this terms, and this is one of the fun things about Yahweh and his terminology and the way he presents a story. So Bashar is the Hebrew word for physical body, and that is what we're sacrificing. But the verbal root of Bashar, spelled exactly the same way, which usually defines a term, speaks of a herald, speaks of someone communicating important news, conveying a message to you. So one of my principal roles today is to be the Bashar of Dod, just as Dod was the Bashar of Yahweh. He heralded Yahweh's plan. I herald Dod's return. So we both served as Bashar, heralds, and we both sacrificed our Bashar physical bodies. Therefore, the thing that matters with Dod is what happened the next day on Matzah. His soul, of course, survived. And his soul is what took our guilt into Sheol on Matzah to unleaven us from the fungus of religion and politics so we could appear perfect before God. And my case, my nefesh is going to rise above this Bashar body and going to be beside Yahweh as he not only orchestrates this massive conflagration where it'll be the greatest spectacle the earth has ever seen, with this dancing waters cascading off the Temple Mount and this magnificent blaze with Yahweh's voice returning to Yisrael, to his people. After all of this time, and they're able to witness, there is my body that the Torahless one bludgeoned, but here is my soul right next to Yahweh and to next to my king, Dod. So it will be a marvelous, marvelous spectacle that is specifically designed and explained, not only in the dress rehearsal that Eliyahu performed 2,888 years earlier, but also in Numbers 19, where we are told specifically about the sacrifice of the Adama Pera and its purpose, which is told in Numbers 5, which is to cleanse and prepare the adulterous woman, which is Yisrael, for having been political and religious and having erased Yahweh's name, having trounced on the attributes and achievements of their Messiah, Dod, forgetting almost everything that he has done for them. Well, Dod, as the returning Messiah and king, wants Israel back. And so it is the purpose of the Adama Pera to prepare the adulterous woman of Israel for this homecoming and family reunion with the Messiah and King, Dawud. That is the story here, just as we come full circle in so many other ways, we come full circle in this one as well. And then he says, of every living animal, kol chaya. Che is the Hebrew word, the verb for life and renewal of life and that sort of thing. It's often presented in the plural, chayam, because Yahweh is offering us the opportunity to live multiple lives. That's why we should not be surprised that Dawud has already had two and will have a third. I will have three as well, because my current life is going to end at the Shavua harvest in 2026, and I will be returned with Elia in 2030 to serve as one of the two witnesses encouraging Yisrael's return, the continuing to do what we're doing now, to reacquaint Yisrael with Yahweh's name, to restore Yisrael in relationship to the Mashiach and Malak, the son of God, Dawud, so that they come to appreciate, Israel comes to appreciate the terms and conditions and benefits of the Bereth covenant, as well as how they are achieved through our response to Yahweh's seven Moed Mikre. So it's the same mission, and we come back together to accomplish this, and it is all about extending our lives. And in this case, that God says, all of the animals were made out of the elements of the earth. And he will tell us that they all had a living soul, a nefesh. So one of the things we learned from this is that Yahweh not only told us that Adam was comprised out of the elements of the earth earlier, he also told us that Adam had a nefesh. And now he is reinforcing the fact that every animal has a nefesh, the soul that animates our lives and is the reservoir for our personalities and attributes and attitudes. It is something that is common amongst all animals. It gives us the ability to observe what is happening around us and to respond appropriately. Now, when Yahweh speaks of Ha Sedeh, which is the breadth of the land that is conducive to life, and in this statement, what he is sharing is that outside of the garden, and to some degree even inside the garden, there was an enormous numbers and types of animals, birds and fish and reptiles and mammals and you name it. And therefore, what Yahweh is doing is he says, I'm going to take all of these various types of animals, and I'm going to introduce them to the man that I've created, another animal, but a very special one, because he also has an Nesama conscience. And there's going to be a meet and greet. So he said, all of the expansive environment, in addition to every bird of the sky, brought them to Adam, El Ha Adam, towards and in the direction of the first man conceived in God's image with a conscience and design, so that we're an upright creature with hands and opposable thumbs, that we can use tools and writing and the unique kind of vocal apparatus so that we can speak and share words together. And it says then that whatever he would call them and how he would greet and welcome them, this is not a simple term. And I realize that almost all English translations, kara and ma kara lahu, is rendered that whatever he would call it or call them, he was actually would be singular, where him would be plural and them. But sometimes words just work a little differently in one language versus another in terms of the grammar. Ma is an interrogatory. It speaks of who, what, where, why, and when. It encourages us to question the implications of things. Kara, though, is the verb, and it is not an ordinary verb. Kara must be in the top half a dozen most important and pertinent concepts that God wants us to appreciate. Kara means to invite or to welcome. It means to summon and to meet. It means to read and to recite, to call out and proclaim. Kara is the basis of the title that Yahweh has afforded his seven annual meetings. They are called Mikra in the singular form and Mikre in the plural. That means that Pesach, Matzah, Bikurim, Shavuah, Teruah, Kippurim, and Sukkah are invitations to meet with God, to be called out and welcomed into his presence. So he's foreshadowing these things, not only with the Adama, not only with Adam, not only with Yatzah, but and Chaya, but also with Kara. And Kara is not used here once, just once, but twice. Therefore, everything for the benefit of the relationship. This is Cole Asher. Asher, I've shared with you on these programs, and I will continue to emphasize, is the word that brought us all together. The first word that I translated in Hebrew some 23 years ago is Asher. And it was because it was used in a statement that is now part of my absolute favorite prophecy, which is in 2 Samuel 7. And I knew that every English translation, I must have had, 15 bibles laying around at the time. I read every single one of them, and I went online and read more of them, and there wasn't a single translation that got Asher right in the context. And so I figured I'd better look it up and try to figure out what it means. More coffee. And when I did, I realized that Asher is a noun. It's also a proper noun. It's a name. It's a verb. It's a preposition. It's a relative pronoun. Asher is the workman, if you will, of the Hebrew language. And it is a word that when it is translated as I have rendered it here, everything was from Cole, but for the benefit of the relationship, to reveal the proper path to walk to get the most out of life. What we're doing is we're bringing together the preposition and the verbal aspects of this word to have a more comprehensive understanding. And when we do, and we use that definition of Asher, it fits very nicely into almost all places that we find it. And understand what Yahweh was trying to achieve with us is an Asher. He wants to have a relationship with us, and he wants us to enjoy the benefits of that relationship. And to do that, we have to embark on the proper path and walk to him to get the most out of life. Therefore, everything for the benefit of the relationship, Adam, this first man, approached and designated, called out to and encountered Kara again, reached out to and summoned, designating them by name while greeting them, interacting with them, that became the name and reputation, Shem Yu, of that living soul. So Kara again reemphasized, we've been through that. And then we have Shem. There is so much to learn by Shem. You know that the outcry of Jews and particularly Israelis has been that as the world has erupted in hate towards them, as they were victimized by Islamic jihadists and have tried to defend themselves and prevent it from happening again, the world has largely with this, particularly with this union of progressives and Muslims, which is the most hypocritical, ignorant and irrational, grossly immoral alliance probably ever made, that there is rising anti-Semitism around the world. And so anti-Semitism is used as a term to designate rhetoric or activities that are opposed to the ethnicity known as Jews. The actual term is Ya'ud, and in the plural, Ya'udem. And collectively, as an entirety, it would be Yisrael and Yisraelites. And very few people know the meaning of the word. They think that Shem is defined by one of the names of a character that lived long ago, related to Noah. But that's not the primary meaning of Shem. Should not have even gone there. Spelled the same way, pronounced as Shem, the word means a place. It could even be there, if you will. And a place, of course, would be Israel. But that's not the primary meaning of Shem either. Primary meaning of Shem, and the way that it is used most often throughout the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, is as it is here. It is a name. It speaks of a name, a proper designation, reputation. And so in Judaism and its influence on Israel, there is this aversion to Yahweh's name. Jews almost universally have written Yahweh's name out of their lives. One of the greatest crimes in human history. It is, without that crime, there could be no Christianity. There could be no Islam. Jesus Christ cannot be God when you know that God's name is Yahweh. Allah most certainly can't be God. Well, under any circumstances, he's either a rock or a snake, depending on how you perceive him. But he's certainly not God, and he can't be the inspiration of the Torah and the prophets and the Psalms and the Injil, as he refers to them, the Gospel, if his name is Allah, when, and that's one of like eight names for the non-God of the Quran, if Yahweh is the author of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. And by erasing his name, they open the door for these kind of derivations of replacement foolology to take root and grow. These crude counterfeits. And so they have, Jews now refer to Yahweh as Hashem. Ha meaning the, Shem meaning name, the name. So they are touting the name without saying the name, because they erase the name from their lives. Great travesty, and at a unfathomable cost in Jewish lives and souls. One of the great travesties of Judaism. Now, let's go back to anti-Shemite. If you look at the truest meaning of the word, it means against the name. Now, you can look at that in one of two ways. Against the name Yahud, which has been corrupted to Jew. But that doesn't work very well because, well, you know what Yahud means? It's a combination of Yah's name and Dod's name. It means beloved of Yah. Yahud means beloved of Yah. It's a combination between Yahweh's name and Dod's name, father and son. And if you recognize that the only name presented more often, more than 1,100 times, that Dod's name appears in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, is Yahweh's name. It appears 7,000 times, erased 7,000 times, replaced by Satan's title, the Lord. And so, to be opposed to the name means to be opposed to Yahweh's name. Well, that would include and begin with the practitioners of Judaism who were so opposed to Yahweh's name, they erased it from his testimony. They erased it from their lives. They were the most opposed of all people to Yahweh's name, and therefore the worst and most egregious anti-Semites. It would also include all Christians, because they have also erased Yahweh's name and replaced it with a mythical misnomer and crude counterfeit known as Jesus Christ. It would include also the 2 billion Muslims who have, I can't say they have erased Yahweh's name, because Allah wasn't very smart and Muhammad was really stupid. So Yahweh's name actually appears throughout the Quran, but it's always to denigrate people. And so it is one of the true confessions of the Quran. You know, Allah says, I am the only God. And yet Yahweh's name is written throughout the Quran ignorantly by both Muhammad and Allah. But that's an interesting insight. I want you to know it, that the most anti-Semitic of all people are religious Jews who are most opposed to Yahweh's name. Second unto them would be Christians who have replaced Yahweh's name and won't even say Yahweh's name and have used replacement foolology. And third unto them that have used only foolology would be Muslims who condemn Jews, condemn Yahud and Allah's name. In fact, Allahu Akbar was designed to convey Allah is greater than Yahweh. Of course, Muslims don't recognize that, even though it's obvious that's what it means. I mean, it's undeniable that is what it means, because how can Allah be the only God if Allah is greater than Yahweh? You know, it's a conundrum that can't be resolved in Islam. Not that it's going to make any difference, because in religion, people don't really think. And this ends by using the word that I have, in fact, the two words I've shared with you throughout this presentation of Bereshith Genesis 2:19, nefesh, which is our soul. That is the part of us that is unmeasurable, unquantifiable, and yet is our sum total value. The reservoir of all things that are truly valuable to us, that it can extend into eternity. A nefesh, our consciousness, our ability to observe what is around us and respond appropriately. Che means life. Now, I know that there are those who would say, you know, if you're going to spend this much time analyzing every word and then extrapolating that meaning of those words, you know, we aren't going to get through even 10% of the books that you've written in the 16 months we have left to accomplish this. And so maybe you need to move through a little faster. I even had one person write on the Facebook page last night, says, you know, your translations are really great, but I think you missed a real opportunity. You could have just translated the entire Tanakh and left out all the commentary. No, I couldn't. Yahweh wouldn't let me. It was impossible for me to do so. It's like seeing the most beautiful rainbow that has ever existed, dazzling, coming right to your feet and saying, well, I'm going to keep this sucker for myself. No. When you come across something that is profoundly important, stunningly beautiful, incredibly valuable, its value is magnified if you share it. And so this notion that I could keep it for myself is impossible. And when you're translating Yahweh's words and you do what I just did in this passage, and you not only amplify the meaning of those words, but far more importantly, you speak of the implications of those words. What are the implications of Adama? What are the implications of Nefesh? How do Adama and Nefesh work together? Because the nefesh is the feminine aspect of our nature that requires the reference of the feminine of man and earth as we transition from Adam to Adama. These are the insights that take us from knowing what God said to understanding what God said. And that can't be done without this commentary. It can't be done without the insights that are derived from it. It is the jewel of great value that Yahweh is offering to you through me. And so I will make no apology for spending 30 minutes sharing with you all the nuances that can be deduced from a single statement. And that is even unfair, because every time I go through every statement that we discuss, I learn more about it. I can share more about it. If we were to do the same passage tomorrow, I'll bet you I could speak to you about implications we can derive from it for twice as long as today. that is the fun of learning. That is why working at knowing and understanding, Yahweh and Dode would speak of it as chokma, this skill set that we can diligently deploy, where we're able to examine the evidence that is before us and come to understand it by making the proper connections between things and considering the common denominators and other related uses of these words and thoughts. So when I come into your home and we have a cup of coffee together, in my case, a lovely cup of cappuccino, that is what we're going to do. I mean, over the next 16 months, my hope is that I can share my translations with you and then share the insights that can be derived from them. And the more of these you come to know, the more you come to understand who Yahweh is, what he is offering, what he expects in return, the greater the likelihood is that you're going to respond correctly and not only join us at the Shavua harvest and witness the Teruah harvest and the sacrifice of the Adama Parah and the marvelous results that Yahweh achieves for himself, for his son and his people on Yom Kippurim, the day of reconciliations when he returns, and you'll get to camp out with us during Sukkah. You, as a result of transitioning from knowing to understanding and then accepting, can do something even more extraordinary, even more valuable. What do you think that might be? I gave you the answer in part 5 of this series. In fact, we spent almost an hour speaking of it. It isn't good for man to be alone. That's the answer. Because once you know what God is offering and what he expects in return, once you understand how we take advantage of what he is proposing, once you know his name, once you recognize what our Messiah and his son achieved, once you appreciate the conditions and the benefits of the breath covenant, the way that they are delivered through the fulfillment of the Moed Mikre and how these events play out over the next 8.5 years, you can share them and you won't be alone. More people will become part of Yahweh's family. Our eternity will be enriched. Yahweh will be even happier than he is now. That is the ultimate contribution can you make. Can you imagine how much better it will be when you meet Yahweh for the first time or just hang with him for a few billion years? And during all of that time, you will know somewhere back there in your mind that while he did and his son did so much that was beneficial for you and me to be there, that we didn't come in empty-handed. We made a contribution. While we were here, we contributed to the family. Don't you think that would be enormously satisfying? Isn't that with you going from these programs to reading the books, coming back to these programs, coming to understand all that is shared, making it part of the fabric of your lives, and then joining us as we broadcast this message, one live stream after another, to the world, in particular to Yisrael and Yehudim. All right, that's the passage. I had conveyed some insights relative to it as I was addressing what is becoming Coming Home, Volume 4, and I'm going to share those with you. And now I'm sure there'll be many of them that will be redundant with what I have just shared, but one of the things I've learned, that, and it's not just what I have learned from experience over life, but it's something that Yahweh does repeatedly that helps reinforce what I'm going to do now. And that is, if you want someone to go from knowing what you said to remembering what you said and to understanding what you said so they can apply what you said. You tell them what you told them, and then you tell them again. So several things are evident as we'd consider this disclosure from God. Yahweh loves, and he wants to share what he created with Adam, which means he loves life, and he wants to share it with us, giving us more abundant life, giving us an extension of life, sharing our lives with him and with our brothers and sisters of the covenant forever, and also making certain that our time together throughout eternity is enriched by the presence of other living organisms. That's a huge part of all of this. You know, I think that going off and when we're free of our physical bodies, because a physical body can't even go to really effectively even to the next planet. I know, Elon Musk, you think you're going to go to Mars, but it is so much more difficult than building a capsule and a rocket to send people there. It's the experience would be lethal, and you'd never get someone there and back. So with physical bodies, we have too many limitations, and that's as far as it is even remotely possible for a physical being to travel. And so to get beyond Mars and our solar system, to visit another solar system, to explore this galaxy that we call the Milky Way, to explore the next galaxy closest to us, and to explore the some 400 billion known galaxies, we're going to have to be able to shed our physical bodies. We're going to have to become light energy so that we can explore. And when we do that, because of E equals MC squared and the fact that matter is just a diminished amount of energy that that God's language has managed to make organized, if you will, we will always be able to transform some of our energy and have our soul reside in that physical entity for a period of time so that we can go off and explore in physical bodies and then go back to being an energy-based being. Now, when we do that, it will be exciting to see other stars. But, you know, once you've seen one big ball of fire of a nuclear reaction, the fission reaction of a star, you know, the thousandth one that you see, or the 400th billion, after a while, just big balls of fire, won't be quite as exciting as when it was played on the piano. Now, the other thing is that how many rocks with rotating around, orbiting around big balls of fire, can you see? Okay, there's a pretty blue one, there's an orange one, there's a white one, there's a green one, there's an icy one, there's a hot one. Okay, you know, that's all interesting. I can see that would be kind of fun. I'm up for that. I'll go explore with you. But you know what would be really interesting? If in billions of those galaxies and billions of the stars within those galaxies, there are billions of planets like Earth, where the grass grows, where the water flows, where the breeze caresses us, where the sun warms our skin, and where plant and animal life flourish, trees rising up from the ground, firmly rooted, birds that fly and nest in them, gazelles that leap between them, fish that swim in the sea. Wouldn't it be marvelous to go off and explore with our Father and examine other planets with life? I don't think that could ever get wearisome. Can you imagine walking with dinosaurs and being able to communicate to them and with them? How exciting, how rewarding that would be to be able to fly with eagles, to swim with the humpbacks. I think I spoke of dolphinery in my last program. Somebody, one of the our leaders in our and team yada yada pointed out to me it's actually a term. But to speak with dolphins and to swim with them in warm waters, above lovely reefs, I just think we could do that forever. And so I think what Yahweh is disclosing here is a big part of what he is offering when Eden is not just the whole earth, but the entire universe. And we're not just being introduced to life here, but everywhere. That's one of the advantages of Yahweh setting the system up the way he did, with life being comprised of DNA, which is a three-dimensional alphabet or language. He can use that same tool to take the elements of those earths and transform them into exciting life forms. So, the other thing that we learn from this statement, in addition to God celebrating life and wanting to share it, is that God values our opinions. He wants us to watch us engage with other living creatures. Remember, I said that dazzling rainbow that you experience is far more magnificent if you get to share it. Well, the same thing is true with life. Yahweh conceived it, and he wants to share it with his very special family. And while we're here on Earth in our present situation, while Yahweh, for me, isn't the least bit intimidating, we have a very good relationship. He's funny. He's kind of like, in a lot of ways, his personality is projected partly through Moshe, partly through Dod, partly through Elia. And the Elia part is the part that I get the most. He loves to be sarcastic. He's pulled my arm, my leg, and every which way over the years. And so while I recognize he's God, I don't put him on a pedestal. I most certainly don't worship him. I'm not the least bit intimidated by him. I see us as collaborators. We're working together to achieve a mutual end. But nonetheless, I recognize that our relationship works best if I listen and he talks. And that's just the way we work together. I read what he has to say, I think about it, and then I share what I have learned as a result of it. That has been our relationship from the beginning, and it works really well that way. I don't share a lot of opinions of mine with Yahweh. In fact, in terms of what we would call an opinion, an attitude or a perspective on things, rather than try to share mine with Yahweh, thinking that maybe, some way he might accept my perspective on something, I don't ever do that. In fact, I don't think you could find a time in the last 23 years where I've attempted that. I don't ask Yahweh even for favors. The thing that I do instead is I have tried wherever possible to model my perspective, my attitude, my approach to things to his. So if God is exceedingly supportive of his family, but extraordinarily opposed to those who harm his people, I'm going to be the same way. If Yahweh loves life, I love life. I can't think of anything that would be inappropriate of modeling our approach to life after Yahweh's approach to life. If he conveys a message and I'm scratching my head, I have some like this. For example, I am the first to appreciate how Dod fulfilled Pesach, Matzah, and Bikurim. It's never said explicitly, but it is obvious. I mean, the amount of evidence to confirm this is overwhelming and undeniable. But at no place did he just come out and say, you know, the first Psalm, okay, my name is Dodd. I am the Son of God. I am the Messiah. I am the King. I'm going to live three lives. And my first life, this is what I'm going to achieve. And I'm going to write all of these Mizmor songs so that you might understand my three lives, my relationship with Yahweh, and appreciate my fulfillment of the first three Moed Mikre and my return on the sixth to celebrate the seventh with you. Yahweh never once says, well, the purpose of Pesach is to open the doorway to life. The purpose of matzah was fulfilled by Dodd's soul carrying our guilt into Sheol to deposit it there, never to be seen again, so that we are perfected and immortal and therefore able to be adopted into God's family where we are enriched and empowered. All of that is undeniable. All of that is deduced from contemplating his testimony regarding it, as well as is the fact of Abraham and Yitzhak performing a dress rehearsal for a harbinger for the fulfillment of Pesach exactly 40 Yobel or 2,000 years to the time that Dodd would fulfill it at exactly the same place on Mount Moriah. It's obvious. Every element of the story tells us that. But Yahweh didn't just blah. The blah is a, there are sheep in Yah's flock that when exposed to threats or nonsense, just go blah. So being a little sheepish here. He presented it in a way that if we thoughtfully considered the nuances of every word and how every word formed complete thoughts and how those thoughts related to other things that Yahweh had conveyed, we have the nesama, the conscience, the ability to see right and wrong, good and bad, truth and lies, that sort of thing, so that we can deduce all of these conclusions and share them with you. It's what I've done over the last 23 years. But it isn't all laid out just real simple like. And there are times when I was in this process, because my whole process, we talked about this last night, I was really open and vulnerable with you. I told you exactly how Yahweh and I worked together and why we worked this way, which rather than being a prophet with a data dump, Yahweh didn't want it that way. He wanted to send a message to his people that all of this was available to them if they had done what I have done and studied his testimony and analyzed each word and made the proper connections between things, they could understand who God is and what he's offering and expects in return, and could figure out the dates that everything was going to be fulfilled and how Yahweh's promises were enabled. That's what Yahweh wanted to convey to his people. This has always been available to you, and as the way that he could validate my testimony, because my testimony is based upon his, making it undeniable. Okay, so with all of that said, we are back to this position where we must work at it and we must learn and we must refine and hone what we come to know about God over time. It isn't a data dump. So long story short, I don't have any short stories to make long. I only have long stories that I managed to make longer. But you know, thank you nonetheless for inviting me into your home and listening, because this stuff is important. And you can see I'm passionate about it. I want you to know what I know. So I went to Yahweh several times, and I've said this is about my only time that I imposed my opinion. And I said, God, couldn't you just make this easier for people? I mean, look how hard it was for me and how much time it took for me to come to know all of these things. And wouldn't it have just been easier to just lay it all out and say, this is what everything means? And then I realized, oh, why did I say that? What a dumb thing for me to say. Oh my God. First of all, if he had done that, I wouldn't have this job. This is the greatest job in the world. So I'd write myself out of a job. Okay, so that's selfish. That's no big deal. But there are other aspects of it too. If Yahweh just said, you do this, this, and this, you're good to go. Welcome to the covenant. Everybody would be included in heaven. And heaven would turn out to be as nasty as things tend to be here on earth, where almost every family is broken and the world is at each other's throats. Nonsense prevails. Truth is as rare as hen's teeth. So if God didn't make it challenging, then there would be no filter as to who gets to enjoy eternity. God's not trying to save everyone. In fact, he wants most everyone just to go away so that the people that he has chosen to be with him can enjoy eternity together. But also, if the truth were that blatant, then the religions like Christianity and Islam and Judaism would be vastly more credible because they would usurp more of the truth and use it to gird their lies. And so one of the reasons God says specifically, I blinded my people to this because I didn't want them to know, because if they knew and they incorporated this into their religion, into their politics, then the things that are really important to me, like my name, like my relationship with my son and what we accomplished together, would be sullied. It's one thing for them to be counterfeited and have garbage put on top of, but the truth itself was not known until this collaborative effort between us, and therefore it has never been sullied. And so there was a reason that God made it difficult. And part of that reason, again, gets to the back to work. God wants to show the value of work. You know, when this all comes to a close and I get to be in a situation where I not only get to approach Yahweh, but I get to sit in the back of the room and watch Yahweh greet for the first time all of those who have come to knowledge of Yahweh through the collaborative effort that we have engaged in these past 23 years. There's going to be a genuine sense of satisfaction. I'm going to have a big heart. I can't even imagine the smile, the sense of satisfaction, knowing that we worked at this, we were steadfast, we devoted every day our all to it, and look how well it turned out. There's a sense of satisfaction on that that would not exist if I were simply a robot and he did a data dump and I go blah, 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 blah. There's a credibility of a Moshe, for example. You know, Moshe said, well, I took a method for you. And yeah, we chose to convey the proper pronunciation of his name through this man. The entirety of Dabarim words, Moshe liked them too, is Moshe speaking to Yisrael and to us through them. So Yahweh liked this idea of being able to educate certain individuals so they can speak for him, and that you have the opportunity to listen to a normal guy who has benefited from this knowledge, who can come into your homes, look you in the eye, and, well, have tea and coffee together. What a lovely way to approach you and me. Nothing intimidating about that. You get to know God as I know him, as fun, as approachable, as loving, as the perfect dad. And there would be no way for Yahweh to accomplish that if he tried to do it on his own and came into our world, even with his power dialed down 1,000,000%, he is still going to blow us away. He's still so big, so powerful, so bold, so enormous. You know, we're going to do what Moshe did all the time, faceplant. Okay? That's counterproductive. That's not what God's looking for. He's looking for us to reach up, to grab his hand, to walk like father and child through the universe. He wants to lift us up. So this is the way to do it. So when I say I am the voice of Yahweh, that's what Yahweh says. I am his call, calling out in this wilderness of misinformation to share with you who he is, what he wants, what he's offering in return. I guess I'm not doing any better on the commentary that I wrote about Barashit Genesis 2:9 than I was doing on the passage itself. I have now shared with you three sentences of my prior written commentary. So I can be correctly accused of being enthusiastic about, passionate about, not only Yahweh's words, but what we can learn from them. So I'm going to get through this paragraph before the end of this program, I promise you. And therefore, and when you see my eyes, you know, move, I'm not trying to hide the fact that I'm reading the translations. I'm looking you right in the eye as I share my thoughts about them. And then if I've written commentary, I want you to know everything that I had previously deduced from that statement that Yahweh has made, if nothing else, just to reinforce the learning process. And so there are times that I go to reading, and then times that I go to being extemporaneous. It's most of these shows now are about 85-90% extemporaneous and 10% actually becoming the living embodiment of the books that Yahweh and I collaborated on over these past 23 years. So the statement I'm intending to convey reads, and therefore, these animals were conceived in part for man's enjoyment, company, and benefit. You've seen Wookie appear on the desk with me. You've heard Asher, who is my big Labrador. She likes to sleep on my feet. We're not doing a wide enough angle for you to see Asher here. But animals are wonderful companions, and they were created for us to enjoy. Most importantly, this also reveals how the covenant family will enjoy exploring the universe with our siblings and our Father. We will seek out, interact with, enjoy, learn from, and communicate with other life forms. We will Star Trek to an extent beyond even the Roddenberry experience. We may even be allowed to write, and I've shared this with you, living beings into existence using DNA. I'm going to stick to my competition with the Almighty, and you know, I'm going to one up Yahweh's platypus. He's not only going to fly, I'm going to have the most beautiful feathers on my platypus, and my platypus is going to purr and quack at the same time. And whether God's platypus has these spines that have poison on, no, mine, my platypus is going to be as cuddly looking as an otter. It's going to have the charming eyes and face of an otter. It's going to have the colorful and beautiful wings of a macaw. Going to be able to swim under the water and going to be able to fly in the air and yet be as, well, as cute and cuddly as a Wookiee. I'm gonna enter the competition. I'm gonna play the game to win. I'm having fun with you and having fun with my God. And you know, when you realize that the first child of the covenant, Yishak, do you know what Yishak means? So Abraham and Sarah conceive a child, and God says, "Could you name the child for me?" For the name that I've chosen is Yishak. Do you have any idea what Yishak means? It's what I'm doing right now, laughing and having fun. Yishak means to laugh and play. First child of the covenant actually describes the intent of the covenant. So, in all seriousness, I did finish that paragraph. I'm going to share one more with you, and then we'll end this program, and we'll do another. In all seriousness, I must be dense. Well, that's probably true, because it took me 20 years to recognize this statement for what it actually represents. This was not an exercise in naming the animals, but instead represents Yahweh's preferred way to interact with his creation. He wants us to enjoy sharing his designs and then witness how we engage with them. It is like a father revealing his life's work to his children, hoping that they will appreciate what he has accomplished on their behalf. It is one of life's greatest joys. And this is how Yahweh wants to spend forever with his creation. And my friends, that is the point of all of this. It is why God did all of these things and then shared his experience in the garden with us. Eden is where we are returning. This is Yahweh's idea of a good time. If it is yours as well, consider joining us there, beginning on Sukkah, the 15th day of the 7th month in year 6000 Yah, Shabbat, on October 7th, 2033. There'll be a lovely eclipse of the moon we can all celebrate that evening. Not only will there be this lunar eclipse to accommodate the occasion, Dod, the firstborn of Yahweh, our Messiah and King, will be there to celebrate it with us and sing to us. It will then be that we will experience all of these various things, although on a much grander scale, and encounter all of the life forms that Yahweh has created throughout the universe. Our God, the creator of the universe, Yahweh, has invited you, Kara, summoned you, called you out of the world to read and recite his message such that we can meet together and be welcomed into his company. All from Kara, the verb that was repeated twice. And now we've come to the close of episode 6 of In the Garden, this part of the Yahweh blog. And I am your host, who's looking forward to being with you again in moments as we go to part 13 of Dod's song momentarily. May Yahweh bless you all.